General government to order. Members, the first thing I would like to do is we have a draft LC 1345. I'm going to open a work session on possible introduction of committee member committee measures, not members. LC 1345, this has been at, and we are introducing this as a committee bill at the request of Representative Greenlich. We don't need to put that on the sheet, however. But, and this actually is only a minor part of the bill. The bill is actually about 400 pages, but most of it is, but most of what you see in that 400 pages are word changes on one page and that sort of thing. The guts of the bill is really in the, or of the measure, are really in the first few pages that we have here before us. And so what I would do so that this can get in, what it would do is create a Department of Public Health and transfers all public health functions from the Department of Human Services to the Department of Public Health. And at least it's a conversation that I think we ought to have, so I'm going to ask for your indulgence in introducing this as a committee bill. Just because you vote for this as a committee bill to be introduced does not mean that you support the measure, but rather just that you don't mind having it introduced for the conversation. Is there any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Przanski.
I'm just wondering how many trees we're going to have to take down for this printing of this one for all of us.
Well, as you know, I have as I have found, when they put this to a bill form, they will actually use a smaller font and go on both sides of the paper. So consequently, the bulk of it will actually be about half or a little bit less than that.
I wonder if this bill would allow us, with the transfer of this to the public health, that they'll give us some type of dolly or something to be able to carry these bills around.
I would suggest that maybe you ask Representative Greenlich about that.
See if you can put that as a writer or an amendment.
And you know, with a little bit of luck, this bill will not end up in this committee. But if it does, we'll all have some good reading ahead of us.
Right.
So the chair would move LC 1345 be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you. I'm going to close the work session on possible introduction of committee measures. Members, we are going to move into some. Public hearings, and we're gonna pretty much just go right down the agenda as you see it. The purpose of this is to get these ideas out on the table, and as we're talking about budget reforms this session, I think it's valuable to have these. You will notice that these are not at this point in time scheduled for work session. So what we're going to do is have the public hearings on these. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2480. And Representative Nelson is going to move to the witness table there. And we're also going to plan on spending no more than about 15 minutes on each bill. And so, anyway, and Representative Nelson will budget her time accordingly so that we can make sure that we can hear from other people who might want to speak on the bill as well. So, Representative Nelson, whenever you're ready.
Thank you very much, Chair Crummell.
One moment, Representative. Just as a reminder, any cell phones should be put on vibrate or should be turned off. Thank you. Go ahead, Representative.
Chair Crummell and members of the House Committee on General Government, I thank you today for your consideration of House Bill 2482. And I ask your great patience of a health problem that I have, so I'll get through this. Y'all just bear with me, please.
I'm sorry, Representative, this is not the Health Committee. No, I'm just
Well, maybe I should go over there, but I do apologize. Bad allergies. The concept of zero-based budgeting with performance measurement was introduced in the last session of our state legislature And I'm proud to say that this program was approved in bipartisan unity by the respective House and Senate committees who heard the bill and later, thank you so much, and later passed unanimously the bill through the full House. It was most unfortunate for our citizens, taxpayers, and us that the former bill did not receive a full hearing by the Senate in the last days of that session for an unknown reason. At that time, the President of the Senate explained that the Department of Administrative Services did not feel zero-based budgeting was needed. At this time, it is. Our governor has explained that no longer will the state continue to use its current service-level form of budgeting with an automatic roll-up of costs over the previous biennium. It is in line with the governor's required objectives that this bill today has been modified over the previous bill to require that all entities submitting budgets use zero-based budgeting with a form of performance management in its evaluation. In our audits or proposed budgets, we do not require data showing the need, approval, or changes our citizens have requested for their receipt of state services. We do not require a breakdown of overhead from operational costs, nor do we require each program begin with a zero base in building and justifying its costs. For your convenience, I'm submitting an overview of zero-based budgeting that will likely answer many of your questions, should you have any, regarding this process. I would bet that the majority of this panel already are familiar with zero-based budgeting. While this information is basic in nature, it gives us building blocks in which we can formalize a system of budgeting that reinforces good decisions to continuance, reduction, or expansion of services. I feel that we owe this detail to our bankers, our taxpayers, and clients. No longer can we afford to increase services or even continue services if we do not fully understand how the budgets for those expenditures were developed. It is my hope we can continue to develop zero-based budgeting and the performance measurement criteria that brings clarification and justification to our budget process. The time is now. We do not want to continue with a current service-level approach that we cannot endorse fully and unequivocally. Thank you for your assistance and your time.
Thank you.
If I could, Mr. Chair, just add one brief statement.
Sure.
The previous bill on zero-based budgeting, which we entertained in the last legislature, was jointly sponsored with now the good Senator Bill Morissette. I just want to say that it was just really, motivating for me to continue in this pursuit because, if I recall correctly, almost every individual signed on the bill to begin with. So whatever reason that it didn't get its final hearing in the full House of the Senate is beyond most of the senators who are here today. They do not know why it was not heard, and since then there have been many requests that we continue looking at this potential for zero-based budgeting.
Okay.
And I will do my best to answer any questions if
you
would care to ask any.
Are there any questions for Representative Nelson? Okay. One thing I would ask, Representative, I notice that in the present bill, and I recognize that one of the processes that we go through are amendments, but in the present bill, it states in Section 1, Sub 3, that the department, meaning the Department of Administrative Services, would choose three agencies to participate in pilot programs on zero-based budgeting and performance-based budgeting. And I'm just wondering, is it given the current situation with budgeting and the fact that the governor and many of our members have talked about moving away from current service level budgeting, if you feel that that would still be necessary, or if this was kind of a rewrite of the last bill and that's why that clause got in there.
Thank you for your question, Chair Crummell and members of the committee. It is our hope that we will jointly synchronize the activities that we're requesting in line with zero-based budgeting and performance measurement. It was originally intended that I guess it's lines 11 through 13. It's 14 through 17 on the bill.
Yes.
Were to have originally been, or not originally, deleted in this original draft for this year. So I don't know what to tell you other than it does need to be amended. And no longer are we talking about only including or having a project for simply three agencies.
Okay.
However, I might just point out, I have given you various bits of information about zero-based budgeting, and I want to just mention the truth is that among the states, almost all states use several different forms of budgeting. They use the traditional incremental, which we call the current service level. They use performance-based, program-based, and zero-based budgeting, and combinations thereof. For example, we may determine, as we look at this further and for a final amendment to this bill, determine that we want to look at boards and commissions differently from major agencies, providing the largest form of substantive services to our customers, our citizens. We also could consider having not only biennial budgeting, but annual budgeting, and for certain segments of the agencies as well. So I think that as we consider how we really want to approach a new form of budgeting for the state, I think we want to determine what reform specifically we want. And I will also explain that when it comes to biennial budgeting versus annual budgeting, you will almost always hear those who are involved in biennial budgeting will say, oh, yay, that's much less paperwork. Now, that should be the case for an initial beginning of zero-based budgeting. It should not be the norm, though, once we've begun in the process. You will also hear, when you talk about zero-based budgeting, the many types of zero-based budgeting, as you see probably in the handout that I've given you, we can begin from a point of determining that we want agencies to present their budgets within 75% of proposed revenue, or 90%. Within that amount, we can also specify, based on the performance measurement criteria that's going to go along with the budgeting, that we present within the major budget of that agency a minimal budget, the very least amount of funding that could be spent in this program meet its objective. We can then also add a secondary concept and identify those programs which serve the largest number of clients within that agency and allow them greater flexibility. Or thirdly, we can eliminate any of the direct programs within that agency. So we do have a number of options when we look at budgeting. And certainly, you know, when we think of paperwork, and having been involved in budgeting for most of my adult life in private enterprise, I have yet to hear anybody say, oh, yay, it's budget time, you know. I mean, I just don't think we tend to think in those numbers. Nor where we're in a legislature where we're changing members of our staff, where all members are not part of the Joint Ways and Means committees, where they're not all part of revenue, or any of the subcommittees, and are also often changed from their assignments from their initial election through re-elections. We never seem to grasp the whole picture. So we have those types of issues to deal with as it comes to determining what type of budget reform we actually want.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Okay. Let me just go ahead and stay right there, and let me see if there's anyone else that wanted to testify on House Bill 2482. Seeing none, then I'm going to thank you, Representative, for the information about this bill. And I'm going to close the public hearing on 2482, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2530. And Representative Nelson.
Thank you very much, Chair Crummell, and members of this great general government committee. Once again, I would like to express that I'm grateful to be here
for each one of
them. Donna Nelson, sorry, State Representative, District 24.
Thank you.
I apologize. Once again, I want you to know that I'm grateful for this opportunity today to present House Bill 2530 for your consideration. This House bill is particularly important as we exercise our responsibilities in being accountable to the citizens of our state for the use of their money in providing responsive and responsible services to them through various agencies, commissions, and boards of the state of Oregon. House Bill 2530 is presented in line with the promises of our new Governor Kulongoski to our citizens to be very discerning with expenditures, and especially in this time of revenue deficits as we go about our business of overseeing the entities built over the past many years and those considered for establishment at the present time. This House Bill 2530 simply requires that our joint Legislative Committee on Ways and Means, before consideration of the various state entities' budgets, will evaluate and report to our Legislative Assembly whether the Assembly should change agency activities and governance, eliminate the agency, streamline the agency's performance objectives and related expenses, and or authorize private entities to perform certain agency activities. Such efforts determined to bring about more efficiency, effectiveness, economy, and employee productivity in those required functions and services. We currently do not have a system that presents this information, neither through audits, committee reports, or specialized research that brings clarity and justification to the continuance of agencies, boards, and commissions, nor presents cost and efficiency comparisons if their services could be more economically provided by non-governmental entities. I hope you will join me in continuing to clarify the purpose of this bill with any amendments you may recommend so we can, with clear thinking, justify the continuing of government services in the modes and methods through which we presently conduct business. As a practice continuously employed by private businesses, this exercise should become a part of our biennial budgeting process. Your time and consideration will be greatly appreciated.
Okay. Are there any questions for Representative Nelson? Representative, I do have one question. What kind of an operational effect would you see this as having on our legislative calendar? As an example, we come generally, well, we meet every other year, except last year. We
met all year.
last year we met every couple of months, but anyway, from every 2 years to every 2 months. But when we come in, you know, our Ways and Means process, they start going through the budgets, they start doing the things with the various agencies, and then towards the end of the session, which generally tries to be over within about 6 months, is when we start seeing the budgets coming out for the various agencies. And up to that point, we may have particularly the non-general fund agency budgets coming to the floor and that sort of thing. How would you see this affecting that calendar, though, from the standpoint that if the Ways and Means Committee has to look at an agency to determine whether or not we're going to do one of those three things, reduce, reorganize, or eliminate, change the activities, or authorize a private entity, privatize, in other words,
So if they have to come back, if they do this work and then have to come back to the legislature and then go back and develop the budget, is that kind of how you would see this logistically working?
Thank you.
And would that make us stay here until September or November?
Thank you for your question, Chair Crummell, members of the committee. I hope not to have to ask you to expend more of your valuable resources in spending your time in Salem when it's probably better spent with your constituents. What we can do in this form of consideration is develop performance measurement. When I most recently spoke with those who are involved in auditing, what I found is that we do have a need to audit in terms of legislative intent of bills. We also have a need to have evaluating criteria from the end user. And we do not have that available at this time. We can evaluate on expenditures, you know, the wise use of expenditures in purchasing and buying services and performing services. But as far as to be able to rate the services of those agencies in the delivery, we at this time do not have a process. We have benchmarks. I do know that, and I'm grateful that we have some type of benchmark, but as far as to ask for input. So we have several ways in which we can do that. One that's been recommended is that we develop a system where we continuously have input from those whom for whom service is provided. And this database would continue to be updated on a regular basis. And through a computer program that would suffice. So at the time that we're evaluating services, we also have individuals whom we can contact to find, you know, why the services have not been at an acceptable level, or hopefully, like one department I recently visited here that has done an incredible job for 13 years without increasing their staff at all, we can also give accolades. But there are processes we can put collection data, collection of data system together for determining their performance. We can also evaluate need through the use of various research entities. And I'll give you an example, and it's not to beat on boxers and wrestlers. But, you know, one, we happen to have a commission for boxing and wrestling in the state. And, you know, at the time that commission was established, perhaps it had a very important reason. But then when we evaluate in our economic development, you know, what has been the growth of that type of sports activity over the years since that commission was established, we might find that we probably don't need to be spending that in excess of $200,000 for a boxing and wrestling commission when we have maybe two boxing matches a year, and everybody else knows that wrestling is a theatrical production instead of a true sports event as it's now conducted. That is an example. We've also had recommendations for our constituents that agencies such as the OLCC or DMV perhaps could be should be evaluated in the light of services that should be provided, you know, by private enterprise. I'm not here to advocate either side for the, on those issues, but I think we ought to provide a venue for those who are certainly experienced in various areas of the services provided by these agencies to come before us, and perhaps that can be done on the interim basis with the Joint Ways and Means. We have the e-board that meets on a regular basis, and but we could certainly open the hearings to the public and also to all members of the legislature.
I would point out that meetings are open to the public. The public is not excluded from any of the e-board meetings or from any of the Joint Ways and Means
right.
committee meetings or from any other committee meeting that's held in this building. So I would
not want
to take away the thought that the meetings are not open to the public.
No, thank you, and I will correct the way I said that, but what I meant was that we give them notice that this is the purpose of these meetings, to evaluate the services that have been provided so that they're well aware of the purpose of the meetings rather than perhaps a usual emergency board meeting or usual meeting of the Joint Ways and Means Committee.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Representative Nelson? Okay.
Mr. Chair, could I just add one other thing? It's also been brought out that this is a great opportunity for the use of various of our groups involved in our university system. Research assignments such as this could be very easily coordinated through those entities that already exist.
Okay. Earlier, and I know it was in relation to another bill, but I'm just curious with relation to this bill. But you mentioned annual budgeting, and I know having been in local government, went through the process of annual budgeting. If we were to do an annual budgeting type of program or plan, that means that the legislature would probably have to meet annually also. Is that something that you would see as being feasible?
At this time, and because of our constricting fiscal resources, I would not advocate for that at the present time.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Are there any other questions for Representative Nelson? Okay, and I'll ask if there's anyone, Representative, just go ahead and stay right there for a minute. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2530? Seeing none, then I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2530, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2531. And much to our surprise, Representative Nelson is... So, Representative, whenever you're ready, if you would, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. State Representative Donna Nelson from District 24. Chair Crummell and distinguished members of this House Committee on General Government, I appreciate this opportunity to be here before you today on behalf of the citizens and taxpayers of our beautiful state of Oregon. In line with the philosophy imparted to us through Governor Kulongoski's campaign for office and subsequent stands he has taken on behalf of our state, I submit to you today this proposal, House Bill 2531, which, when implemented, will be in concurrence with his directives for a government in concert with good accounting and fiscal practices. Further, the data which we as legislators will gain as a result of this requested activity will be a most valuable tool for communications with our constituents who are calling for accountability in the spending of their hard-earned monies. The efforts required by this bill will simply delineate those costs which we in the business world call overhead, as we are called upon to run our businesses efficiently and effectively, whether we be a public stock company or private company, from those expenditures spent in the specific operations for which we are in business. In the last session of the legislature and the subsequent special sessions of this last year, none of us were able to ascertain which line items were fixed costs, which personnel costs were for the service sector for our clients, and what the sums were in those areas. It is my hope that we will be able to continue in a work committee to amend this bill to bring this requested knowledge to the forefront in a most professional way, and to establish a procedure in line with zero-based budgeting with performance measurement, which we've also proposed in another government efficiency bill. As responsible custodians of the funds from our taxpayers and those dollars from multiple sources which are deposited in our care, with the requisite action of this House Bill 2531, it will be to the benefit of our custodianship and our citizens that the governor shall require overhead as a separate classification during the budget preparation by all agencies, boards, and commissions. This procedure will more openly describe those services and costs directly impacting the delivery of our services to those who need them without obscuring those specific costs. It further will limit overhead costs to 15% of each budget's expenditure. Sorry for that typographical error. I think this is in line with good business, and I thank you for your support.
Thank you. Are there questions for Representative Nelson? Representative, I'm just curious of a couple of things. One is that in the bill, there's not a definition of overhead. And is that something that you were still kind of working on, or is that something that just sort of got left out? I'm just curious as to what your thinking is on that.
Good question. Thank you very much, Chair Crummell. I will let you know that when I took this draft to LCO, that was the first question that they asked, and apparently it's not something that we worked with before here in state government. And as we discussed what I meant by overhead and what other businesses determine are overhead, we determined that perhaps as an entity it would be to our advantage to determine how we wanted to define overhead of agencies. In the private enterprise, normally, of course, we call overhead fixed costs, those costs that are shared by multiple operational divisions of our business, and those that are not direct to the service provisioning of this of any particular subsidiary. Familiar to the citizens would be the concept of parent companies. With operating subsidiaries, parent companies being those management positions with staff that generally include such cost centers as insurance, legal expenses, the management of the capital assets of the business, the oversight of various divisions of personnel, tax, and those categories. Not those expenses that are normally used in the actual operation of the business. I think it's wise in that each one of our agencies have unique services to deliver that we look at those in different ways. But I will give you one most important example of why we need to do this. In our special sessions, we were called upon, due to the deficit in our revenue, to conserve money and to cut budgets appropriately in line with reduced revenue. Well, it has taken us to this long till the subcommittees on various entities have gone back into action that we've truly found in many of these areas what we have done. And in one very specific area, it was very disconcerting to get the report where it showed that there were about seven categories of health and human service issues, and also their practices, their provisioning for services that were cut at all the local levels, and one position of overhead, that of being a physical therapist at the state level here in Salem, was cut. So this is one perfect example, you know, and I think that once that we realize that, you know, we may not need a staff of 106 individuals to oversee the Department of Economic Development that has spent some $2.5 billion since it was established in 1975. I'm just giving you this example. We may find that those monies that are spent in personnel of those individual entities could be best spent, you know, in the actual receipt of those funds and the use of those funds in counties and districts as are needed to build economic development, rather than in the process of checking the checker.
So, as an example, then, let me go to DEQ for a second.
Okay.
In the metro area, and I'm not picking on any any particular
nor am I.
Agency. I'm just trying to get this, understand this as a concept. In the metro area, in the Portland metro area, for example, we have the DEQ test stations. Every car must pass a certain level of emissions testing. Otherwise, it's disqualified and can't be driven on the road and has to be, at least can't be driven in the metro area and has to be repaired or whatever the case may be. When you drive into a one of the stations, there's the technicians that are there, and they're the ones that are, you know, sticking the rod up the pipe and doing the stuff under the hood, whatever they do, and then the car is tested, and then once it's passed, you pay your fee and that sort of thing, and then off you go. Those technicians would not be somebody that you would be viewing as overhead, but as being part of the service delivery.
That is right, Chair Crummell.
On the other hand, we might have a group of managers in the metro area, Portland metro area, who sort of oversee the operation of those centers. They're a little bit more nebulous. So would they be considered overhead? Or, and you know, for example, the secretary that answers the phone and that sort of thing, would they be considered overhead, or would they be considered part of the service delivery?
Thank you for your question, Chair Crummell. As you look at each one of the operating programs, I think you need to determine that operational unit cannot function efficiently and as required, and in this case by a mandate from a federal entity, for example, or a state entity, without some of the services that are afforded by those individuals at the corporate, quote, headquarters of that state agency. So I think we have to determine that. Do you want to put an additional secretary out in every operational unit? Is that more efficient? But our question is, what is actually essential for the operation and not the number of individuals that are based in disconnected program groups. One more example of this would be in the area of mandates. And while we're still working on government mandates for businesses, that's one area that we've not gotten our clarity to yet from our LCO. But what we found is relates to education, for example. We have a huge overhead. And one of the reasons that the overhead is called for is because it's caused by these several pages of mandates that require some type of reporting back to either the Legislative Assembly or the governor or an individual in a higher status within that department. This is what also I think as we determine what is overhead, we want to be sure that we look at the mandates that require additional individuals who must report certain data. On education, we in our brief research we've done on the university level and also on the K-12 level, we found that those mandates can amount to as much as 8 to 10% of the cost of that school budget. So of a $35 million budget, $3.5 million required just to support the overhead or the management of mandates is a tremendous burden to the school system, for example. And in last session, we were unable to ever determine what the overhead is of the Department of Education here at the state. I'm not hitting on them. It's just that constituents have asked that question. I can't answer it, and I hope this will give us the way in which we can answer those questions.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions for Representative Nelson? Okay. Representative, hang tight for just a second. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 2531? Seeing none, Representative, I'm going to thank you very much for bringing these bills to us
thank you.
Appreciate your testimony and your preparation. And I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2531. I'm going to, at this time,
I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2636. And, you know, I just realized that I should have had you giving us a rundown on those other bills, but that's okay. Representative Nelson did a very able job of doing that. So, but let me ask you to go ahead and give us a rundown on this bill, please.
Certainly, I'd be glad to, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2636 provides that a specified percentage of an agency's general fund balance that is unobligated at the end of the biennium may be distributed to employees. It provides that the remainder stays with the agency. I should mention that this bill, along with the other three bills we've heard today, have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means Committee.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see. We have two people to signed up to testify on this bill. Mary Butkin and Rich, do you guys want to come up together? Or do you, you know, need to stay? Do I need to keep you separated?
Get along well these days.
You get along well these days? Okay.
We're in this whole new love fest, our organization.
Well, Mr. Chair, at least there's that chair between them.
I saw that happening, and I decided to move on.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. For the record, I'm Mary Botkin. I'm here representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. We generally don't have a problem with this bill at all. Our concern is, I mean, let's just talk about process. First of all, if you save money, I don't think it's appropriate to put public funds in somebody's, give it to the employees. Okay, I just don't think that's appropriate. And so I would recommend that the language just be changed, that the funds would stay within the agency to expand services or to reduce workloads or something. The funds that are saved should be utilized to improve service delivery or the services that we provide, not.
Okay. Representative Brzezinski.
Isn't there a program that the state or other governmental entities have in place that an individual that may come up with a new mousetrap that saves a lot of money, some type of an incentive plan that they receive a small amount of money based on that type of savings?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Rich Peppers is with SEIU Local 503, OPEU. It's a long name to get out. Mr. Chair, Representative Brzezinski, you're correct. But it doesn't work on a percentage of the savings basis. It works right on a small fee or a small allocation basis. Generally, I think the intent of trying to create an incentive for people to search for savings is not a bad intent. I think it raises, though, in the public eye probably as many questions as it might answer. The issue that this bill tries to go after, we would agree, is a valuable issue. There seems to be something of an, I would call it an urban myth, that agencies are that have money in their accounts at the end of the biennium are willy-nilly spending that money in order to come out with a zero balance at the end of the biennium, regardless on what they find to spend it on. Some cases of that kind of spending may exist, but also I think what the public sometimes doesn't realize is that there's occasionally, not just occasionally, but often, it's a reflection of careful management by department managers or worksite managers who, out of fear of winding up without the money they need at the end of the biennium because they've spent it on other things, save the money that they have budgeted for a computer system or whatever the case might be until they're sure they're going to make it through the biennium with their budget intact and spend it at the end rather than going ahead and doing it at the beginning or in the middle of the biennium when they are concerned that they're going to run short for capital expenditures or whatever the budget item might be. On the other hand, I would be the first to acknowledge that not just in the public, but even within our own membership, state workers, sometimes there's the belief that there's a rush to spend down budgets at the end of the biennium. And if this kind of an approach can help reduce that feeling or that belief and give people the sense that there is a desire to save money, then we're interested in looking for anything that can be done to cut down on that kind of what I would call an urban myth, just to create systems so that people have less concern that this is happening.
Mr. Chair, last session, again, Mary Botkin, last session we were able, our organization worked with the co-chairs of Ways and Means and the Public Safety Subcommittee, very specifically, to work through the Department of Corrections budget, both for the institutional as well as field services. And, you know, one of the things that we did was to work with our members to identify savings that could be realized within the system by redesigning the way we were operating our facilities and doing a variety of different things. And the thing that brings people to the table is knowing that the money is not going to leave their budget and go somewhere else, but that they will be able to buy back programs and services that as workers or as partners in service delivery they see as important. For example, you know, we went into a budget cycle last cycle with all yard time being eliminated for inmates. Well, you know, it seems like, you know, softball for the inmates may seem like something you could do without to the public, but for our members, it is a way you actively wear out the inmates in an activity that helps them relieve their own stress on an inanimate object rather than a corrections officer or a staff person. And so we were able to identify enough savings that we could actually buy back some security positions that allowed for us to not only manage the yard time, but also to offer some additional security coverage in the yard when inmates were there.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Representative Obakian.
Let's assume that an agency manages to save $10 million at the end of a biennium. Does it concern you at all that there's nothing in this bill that would prevent the legislature from reducing that agency's next biennium budget $10 million in order to make up for the savings that they had acquired?
Depends on where the savings are found.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vakian, we believe the Ways and Means Committee is constantly looking for those opportunities as it is, and saving the money. I agree with the intent of this bill, which is to create an incentive that rewards people for looking for money, looking for savings. And we also agree with the intent of other discussions you've had in this committee about trying to push resources to the frontline service delivery area. So we would be supportive of a frontline service delivery approach.
I guess what I'm wondering is, do you think the reward really exists without that provision in this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Vakian, I'm not convinced it's necessarily there. I think you have a point.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if, you know, you're kind of touching around the edges of one of my frustrations in that our members are never asked for any input in development of an agency budget. You know, if you want to know how to save money, ask people who do the work.
That's right.
And, you know, they are in the same position that you're in. They're going to be down here in the budget committee saying, gosh, you know, we need more money in the budget just to fund these programs that we provide. And at the same time, they're not offered any real input at the very beginning construction of the budget at the agency level, but rather have to respond what is created for them. And I think that that's sometimes very frustrating for folks, because I think that just generally speaking, people who work every day at a job, whether it's in the public or the private sector, know when they are doing things that make no sense and when they're doing things, when they can't do things that they ought to be doing that do make sense. And you know, this is kind of the tip of the iceberg. It's all well and good to say we're going to save money, but let's talk about the whole budgeting process, not just what you do with savings that are identified, because I think that that's the real crux of the issue now, is bringing people in. You know, I don't know how to save money at Snake River Correctional Institution. I don't work there. I go there a couple of times a year. It would be arrogant and foolish of me to suggest to that institution in Ontario, Oregon, how they ought to save money. But if I want to know how to save money, I can go talk to 12 corrections officers and 12 line staff and find out what they're doing that makes no sense.
Okay. Appreciate that. Any other comments?
I do want to come back to Representative Prozanski's comment. There is an incentive system already in place. It doesn't work on a proportion of savings basis, and it has the advantage that it provides an incentive, but it also doesn't allow for a direction of where the savings go. And the point that my colleague here just made is that even if you save money on one aspect, but you believe that we shouldn't be doing X, but we should be using those resources to do Y, you don't have that option, really, unless you have a bigger process that involves frontline workers.
Okay. And we don't want Waterford Crystal included in any kind of incentive.
No Waterford Crystal? Oh, my gosh. What I'm going to do is ask if, with the committee's indulgence, if you'll hold your questions for Rich and Mary. Let me have them stand down for. Actually, I think it would be fine with me if you just stayed right there. But the sponsor of the bill is here, Representative Krupp, and I would like to ask him to come up and join you at the table, unless, of course, you think that I need to keep you all separated as well.
No, we
get along well.
Okay. And what I'd like to do is, Representative, is give you an opportunity to go ahead and testify and that sort of thing. And then if you need to leave, I understand. If you want to stay, that's perfectly fine also. But I didn't want you just sort of sitting back there. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that courtesy. And good morning to my two colleagues here. It's great to see you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp from House District 17. And I apologize, I will not be able to stay for very long, as I am supposed to be meeting with the Speaker as we speak. So I want to make this relatively brief. The reason I brought this concept forward is very simple, is that we have all heard horror stories, and I have had employees of state agencies come to me and complain about how at the end of a biennium there was unused dollars in certain accounts and that they were being spent perhaps unwisely. Just because the time-honored principle here that we have employed over the years in this building and this process is that if you have money left in your account, it means maybe you didn't need it, and we're going to take it away from you. I think that creates a disincentive. I think it creates abuse in some cases. And I think that money ought to be, frankly, used as a reward for efficiency, encourages efficiency. That's the concept of this legislation. It encourages everyone to work together as a team, to be creative, to be efficient as much as they can. You know, we've got some great state employees, and they are sometimes frustrated by the processes of bureaucracy that have been put in place for various reasons. And I think that we ought to allow them an opportunity. And I would frankly agree very much with Mary's comments about if you want to find out how to make an operation run more efficiently, go talk to the rank and file workers out there. And I think that's really true. And that's what this bill is designed to do. Now, this is an incomplete work, and I'll stress that to you right now. And I will apologize to the committee and to the chair for not bringing a more complete bill to you, but we're kind of working on some additional amendments on this piece of legislation right now. Basically, the idea here is that we want to allow an agency to carry over unused funds and not be penalized. When they have achieved that, in the spirit and the intent of this bill, and let me state very clearly, the intent of this bill is for to promote efficiency in agency operations at every level without shortchanging service delivery. And that will take some massaging of the concept, I think, to get us to where we feel comfortable. And I'm going to ask the chairs and the committee's members with ideas and suggestions as to how we may best achieve that. There also needs to be some, I think, opportunity here if you have really dire economic circumstances, such as we are experiencing now, that you in fact would have to suspend this law should this become policy because of the circumstances that we face here. And I would take your suggestions and have some ideas about how to put some qualifications as to when that may be appropriate. Over the last few years, had we had a policy like this in place, I am firmly convinced that many of our agencies would have cash carryovers currently, reserves that they could utilize in the taxpayers and Oregonians' best interest. And at the same time, we would have been rewarding state employees all along the way for really being efficient, doing a good job. Not that they don't now, but it again, this would create an additional incentive. And I think we would have begun over the years to have changed the mindset of bureaucracy to some extent by encouraging, letting people know, at every level of a state agency that we want them to be efficient, and if they are and they save money, that we want to reward them for that. So that is the intent of the bill, Mr. Chair. Again, it is incomplete. 25% of the unobligated money could be paid to the entire group of employees. We set aside another 10% for that. Those particular individuals who maybe have achieved most of those savings as kind of an extra reward for them. In some agencies, I think you would find it difficult for everyone to pull together to really make a difference in a large method. In other words, what I'm saying, there may be one department that could really find a unique way or a method of saving money that really carries the water and the ball for everyone else in the department. And I think we should reward everyone because, again, it's a team-building concept. In my years of an athlete have taught me the importance of everyone working and playing together as a team. But also those individuals who are specifically responsible at the discretion of the director would be possibly able to receive an additional thank you and reward for their work on that project. I think, Mr. Chair, it's clear that we would need to keep some language, implement some language in this concept to keep abuse down so that there would be no abuse in this. And I'm sure we can all think of some opportunities where that could occur. And I think, Representative Avakian, you sort of alluded to that perhaps in your question, is how could we make this work and not create a worse nightmare than what we face today? And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions and very willing to listen to any creative and positive suggestions from committee members as to how to make this concept a reality.
Thank you. Are there questions for Representative Prep? Before I go to Representative Nelson, I want to ask you, Representative, you mentioned amendments, and I assume that you're working with some folks on that. Are you working with some of the stakeholders, for example, the union representatives, management representatives, and that sort of thing? Or
Mr. Chair, not as of yet, but would certainly welcome the opportunity to do that with my friends here to address their concerns, because I think this is a win-win for everyone in the state, and from the taxpayers, certainly the as a reward to employees who do a good job, and certainly I think for us in the budgeting process. Again, had we had some surpluses set aside in individual agency budgets, I think we would have less issues to deal with today that we're facing.
Okay, thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Krupp, for being here. Just four little quick questions. Would you believe that we need some performance measurement criteria established when the budget is drafted? Because what do you measure against, you know, in the end?
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Nelson, yeah, that's a good point.
Secondly, what if one of the fine members of one of the departments did what some begged us to do last special session, which we did not do? They asked us to put a hold on new programs now, which, of course, different legislators had different concepts of what that was good. I happen to be one that thought that was wonderful, a hold on new programs. Now, if this department does determine to put a hold on new programs, now, are they going to get the money that they would have had on those programs that we already have funded the department for?
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Nelson, I would say no. I would like to propose language that would be one of those abuses that I was talking about. I think if we have made the decision, the Ways and Means Progress or process, that easy for me to say, right, that a program is worthy of funding, and then for some reason we put it on hold, I think that clearly we would want to allow that program to remain in a suspended state without using that money for other issues, and certainly, in my opinion, should not qualify for the concept that we're talking about here. So there should be language that would not allow those monies to be used for the purposes of our intent here.
And a last follow-up question, Mr. Chair. There appears to me to be and as you have this in business, I can certainly agree. I think it's wonderful that when we can reward employees for doing what's, you know, efficient, effective, economical, and certainly more productive, it improves the excellence of a program. The difficulty in accounting who deserves this money, it's going to require some type of attendance record of who was there for the largest portion of the year, who should get a proportion based on attendance or based on efforts in that specific program that saved funds. So I think that's one area of management that we might want to include. And with that, I really question the bonus to management in that salaries are already far from commensurate with the worker bees, to further reward management when it's their job to achieve this very activity, to see that it is and provide the venue and the environment and the encouragement for it to occur. I guess I have a question of whether overhead should be getting the money saved, or it should go to the worker bees, and I think that's a consideration.
Well, Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Nelson, that brings up, I think, an important point, and we've sort of covered it already, is that I would not want, and it would not be my intent for this legislation to, for these types of incentive rewards to be misappropriated for whatever reasons to any group of individuals who are not, first of all, deserving, and secondly, who were going to receive those dollars for something other than their involvement in being team players. In other words, cronyism. I wouldn't want that to be a circumstance. Now, you're addressing management issues. I wouldn't want management to get any larger proportion of the reward, because as we've, I think, agreed here in our conversation, that it's the worker bees, it's the people on the front lines that are going, are first of all going to come up with the suggestions, because they see them every day as they're out there doing their work. And secondly, they're going to be the ones who really implement these ideas and efficiencies that they're going to come up with. And so I think it's important that our direction here is that those worker bees, for lack of a better term, are the people who really get the reward. Now, if we have a top-heavy management structure in any agency, then I think we in the Ways and Means process in this building, we ought to be looking at that for whatever reasons. Because typically in any, as you're very well aware of your years of experience in business, you should only have a certain level of management managing a large number of individuals out there providing service delivery, whether it's private enterprise or here in the government. So I would think that we would be able to address that issue in our further working of this concept.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask one last question, if you please. And the other issue I guess I'm most concerned about is the one that happened in our special sessions where we were searching desperately for money. And we found monies at agencies, as we recall. As a matter of fact, we found $12 billion in 52 agencies, 52 different accounts that we were unable to touch. And we had difficulty in borrowing from one division that had excess monies. For example, we had ones that had already had a commitment to construction projects that we wanted to hold and say, could you give that $7 million back for that building so that we can fund K through 12, which is a mandatory constitutional requirement. I guess that's the other one. I have a concern here that while the monies may not have been needed here, they're desperately needed in other services for clients. And for us to give it to employees, not that they don't deserve it for hard work, but that we ought to have the right to transfer funds to where needed.
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Nelson, I would say that we will be well served as a state if we provide an incentive for everyone to work together as a team and be efficient and save money. I think in the long-term perspective of the best interests of everyone, that's the goal we ought to try and achieve here. Now, I think that the point you're getting to is what I alluded to earlier in terms of a safety valve for if you have a circumstance where you have very dire circumstances, where the circumstances we're involved in now, where we've had a number of quarters, I think six or seven consecutive quarters of precipitous decline in our economy here in the state of Oregon, certainly our tax collections. And I think under those circumstances, there should be an ability for the legislative body to make appropriations decisions that would be able to access these dollars. Now, by access, I mean that, in my opinion, they ought not just take the dollars. I think they ought to borrow it with the intent to repay, because then I go back to the point of that we're trying to change the bureaucratic mindset of how we spend dollars. And if a group of people have worked together as a team and they've done a good job, then we ought to reward them. Maybe that reward doesn't come right away. Maybe it comes when we get back on our feet financially. But at some point in time, I think it needs to occur.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions for Representative Krupp?
Representative, I want to thank you for coming down and testifying today and for presenting this bill to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I would appreciate any suggestions from any members of the committee as to how to make this a more well thought out and practical and implementable concept, because I really think that this is a timely opportunity for us to address these types of issues. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I look forward to working with you.
Thanks. Rich and Mary, would this concept, in your estimation, create a violation of the current contract that's been bargained between the bargaining units in any way?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I could be wrong on this. I don't believe it creates a violation currently, although one of my comments I was going to follow with is that I believe that it is. It would be helpful to, as part of the process of amending and looking through other ways of changing the bill, to figure out how to fit it into a collective bargaining process, because any program that is created is going to work better if it is figured out with the folks on the shop floor, as Mary was saying, how it would best fit their circumstances, and a collective bargaining way is the best way to do that. And if I could also maybe just add on another comment. In general, as I said before, we're very interested in figuring out a way to get to the bottom of this belief that's out there that administrators or agencies are just spending down their budgets at the end of the biennium, and certainly there are examples of that happening. I would submit that's probably not as frequent as people generally believe. So we're generally favorable to this kind of effort. But the other thing that I want to raise, just as one of the other trade-offs that occurs in this kind of a effort, is it's very easy to get into the area of making decisions about service delivery that really are the purview of the legislature. I'll give you some examples. Especially with public service delivery, governance and public accountability are a huge part of what agencies have to contend with and do. Well, one way to save money could be for agency personnel to suggest, let's cut down on the number of rulemaking hearings we have for the public to get input into what we're doing. Well, instead of five hearings around the state, let's just have one in Portland or in Salem. Might seem a good way to save some money, but the trade-off is less public access. And a similar example is in human resources, where we represent a lot of people. There is a lot of emphasis from advocates for clients of human resource programs that the agencies need to do a better job of outreach to potential clients, food stamps as an example, to let people know this is available for their use. And a lot of pressure from agency advocate stakeholders to improve on that front, and for good cause. Well, personnel could come to a conclusion that maybe we don't need as many letters or posters or outreach coordinators or folks that can go out and tell people, let's just have one website and let people find this stuff themselves. So there are significant trade-offs that often get into the area that really should be reserved for the legislature to contend with, that you can get into with this kind of a heavy emphasis on finding savings without necessarily considering the other side of what the money is going to.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I have a suggestion, and I think perhaps it's a better suggestion to take to Representative Krupp and work with him to put together some amendments for the committee. But it occurs to me that one of the ways we do work within our agencies when we have a mutual agenda is through joint committees. And I don't see any reason why there couldn't be a provision within the bill, and I was looking at the relating to clause. It has a very broad relating to clause.
Yes, it does.
That perhaps we could take a look at developing some language that the agencies must create, a budget and savings committee that would be made up both of union folks and management folks in equal numbers, so that you don't have anybody kind of dominating the discussion, either the rank and file or the managers, and that you really can kind of look at a way of doing this and implementing it. You know, as I said early in my testimony, it makes no sense at all for me to tell Snake River how to save money, or for me to tell Eastern Oregon Correctional Institution how to save money. And it certainly doesn't make any sense for them to tell each other how to save money. What makes sense is for them to say about their own work area, this is how we could save some money. And, you know, through a joint labor management committee, you could get some very valuable input. And it would also give you a venue in which somebody says, wait a minute, this is a legislatively mandated program. You know, there's always going to be somebody on a committee like that that's going to know that, or one of us will. I mean, at some point, if you have a process in place, then there's going to be some checks and balances just by virtue of your process. The other thing is that, you know, if they identify a lot of savings, or even a little bit of savings, it's also a great way to identify how the savings ought to be utilized. You know, you can use the same kind of a committee to say, you know, we don't want to give everybody a $25 check. What we want to do is buy back a program over here that will provide for some real services, or want to buy back housing for one of our clients, you know, whatever. And maybe I'm still idealistic enough to believe that our members really are pretty altruistic about why they're here to begin with. And given the option of buying housing for one of their mentally ill clients or getting a $25 check in their pocket, I got a hunch they'd go with the housing.
Okay. Representative Nelson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mary and Rich, the thought came to my mind of how this would impact PERS.
you know, if you're given additional sums of money, I don't know, you know, but I guess that's one area that we'd have to certainly work on too, wouldn't we?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I believe that this bonus, or if that's how the bill wound up, could be defined not as additional income that then gets counted, but as a bonus in some form that doesn't wind up having to be counted in calculating the percent of payroll that has to go into PERS. I believe that's possible. I could wind up being proved wrong later. What I would like to commit to, Mr. Chair, is that I would be happy on behalf of my organization to take up the invitation from both you and from the sponsor of the bill to work on this bill in some form going forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Any other questions for these two folks? Thank you. That's all I had signed up to testify. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 2636? Okay. Before I close the public hearing on it, I think what I'm going to do is make it an invitation, both Mary and Rich, for you to work with the sponsor. And I'll stay in touch with the sponsor as well in terms of what possibilities there are for this type of legislation. I have worked in the public sector before where we have created bonuses and it has worked very well. But one of the underlying understandings must be that you're not saving money to create bonuses at the expense of the services that need to be provided. And I think that has to be sort of an underlying principle that everyone sort of buys into and is willing to abide by. The other thing that I find interesting is the idea of carryover and how we allow as a legislature for carryover, particularly from one biennium to another to the next, to stay with an agency so that those dollars can be utilized, as you mentioned, in buying back some services or in other sorts of savings that can be realized. So I think there are some possibilities here, and do invite you to go ahead and do that, and I'll stay in touch with the sponsor in that regard as well. Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2636. And being as how we don't have anything else coming to consider today, members, I just remind you that we are on the floor today at 10:30, not 11:30 as usual. With that, we will stand adjourned.